The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. The Honorable Judge Cochran, Judge Larkin, Judge Gaitas, the Honorable Jean M. Cochran presiding.
Good morning. Welcome to the Court of Appeals. Today is February 24th, 2021. We have five cases on our calendar today, three oral and two non-oral. The oral cases are proceeding on the Zoom platform in accordance with pandemic-related court orders. The first case on our calendar today is State of Minnesota versus Albert James Conant. The procedural rules for this Zoom oral argument are the same as those that apply to our in-person oral arguments. Each party will have 15 minutes for its primary argument, and appellant will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. Marshall is keeping the time in one of the rectangles in the grid view, which hopefully council can see. If there's any technological issues, the marshal will stop the time, so you will have your full allotment of time once we resume. The oral argument is being recorded by the Court of Appeals. Just a reminder that any other recordings are not authorized except with the express prior permission of the Minnesota Court of Appeals. I will ask counsel to identify yourself and the party you represent at the beginning of your argument. We may also utilize a feature during this oral argument, the hand raising feature. So look for that on your grid view of, in your view of the judges. As you proceed during your oral argument. So, counsel for your appellant, you can proceed when you're ready. Thank you.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Anders Erickson, and I represent the appellant this morning, Albert Conant. Mr. Conant is requesting that this court reverse his first-degree burglary conviction because the state failed to prove that he had the intent to commit a crime at the moment of his non-consensual entry into his father's house. The Minnesota Supreme Court made clear in State v. Davis that to establish a burglary when a defendant enters a building without consent, the state must prove that the defendant had the intent to commit a crime at the moment he entered the building. In this case, while Mr. Conant entered his father's house without consent, confronted Ms. Potami about their relationship, and even made a scene while inside the house when he was forced to leave, the state did not prove that he had the specific intent to cause anyone bodily harm or to start the house on fire when he entered the house. I will start with the state's failure to establish that Mr. Conant had the intent to commit an assault when he entered the house. There are two reasons why the state failed to prove his intent to commit an assault. First, the jury's not guilty verdict on count two, which is another first degree burglary charge, established that the jury found that Mr. Conant did not have the intent to commit an assault when he entered the house. On page 191 of the transcript, the court instructed the jury that it could find Mr. Conant guilty of first-degree burglary assault if he had the intent to commit an assault when he entered the building. The jury found him not guilty of that charge. That supports the reasonable theory that he did not have the intent to commit an assault at the time of entry. Second, the factual record supports the conclusion that Mr. Conant didn't have the intent to commit an assault upon entry. When he first entered the house, he didn't threaten anyone. He didn't make any aggressive movements or attempt to assault anyone at that point. It was only after he was confronted by both residents of the house and was asked to leave and was pushed out of the house that there was any sort of aggressive behavior by Mr. Conant. So at that moment, when he first entered the house, there was no evidence that he had the intent to harm anyone at that point. As far as the arson allegation, there's also no evidence that he attempted to or that he intended to start a fire while inside the house. Again, when he first entered the house, he didn't threaten that he was going to start the house on fire or that he was going to cause a fire at all. It was not until after he was again pushed out of the house and confronted by the residents that he sprayed the aerosol. But at no point, even after spraying the aerosol, did he try to set it on fire or make any sort of threats that he would be attempting to start the house on fire. And again, for a first degree arson, It's not just spraying an aerosol can or even starting a fire. It's you have to have the specific intent to actually start the house on fire, damage the house, or destroy the house. So there's a lot more than just possessing an aerosol can upon entry into the house. And again, we're in the circumstantial evidence review for both of these allegations, in that even if this court finds that there's a reasonable theory that upon entry, he intended to assault someone inside or intended to start the house on fire, there's also the reasonable theory that he didn't have the intent to do either of those specific crimes. And again, this theory is supported by the fact that when he entered the house, he didn't make any aggressive movements or even make any threats or attempts to start the house on fire. So even if this court were to find that there is a reasonable theory that he had the intent to commit a crime, there's also the reasonable theory of innocence.
Mr. Erickson, the reasonable theory of innocence that you argue in your brief, as I understand it, is that he, Mr. Kona, went to the house with the intent to talk to his former girlfriend and try and win her back. Is that correct?
Yes.
So if that was his intent, why would you agree that the record shows that he was not welcome in the house, that he was told not to enter the house?
Yeah, absolutely. It was a non-consensual entry into the house.
Okay. And then would you agree that the record shows that he had a can of flammable liquid in his sweatshirt pocket when he entered the house?
Absolutely. As well as a lighter. That's correct.
So if his intent was simply to, try and win back his girlfriend, get back together with her, why would he enter the house with a flammable liquid and a lighter? I mean, that those aren't things you carry around in the normal course of daily life.
Right. And it would be only speculation to try to figure out why he had those in his pocket. But again, it's more than just spraying an aerosol can or even lighting it on fire. There has to be the specific intent to start the actual house on fire, damage it, or destroy it. So it's a lot more than just entering a house with the possibility of spraying an aerosol can. And absolutely, those facts are all true. He entered after they told him not to, and he entered and he sprayed the aerosol can upon leaving the house. But again, what this court has to look at is what his intent was upon entry. And there's nothing that indicates that he tried to light anything on fire while inside the house, or even if he did try to light the aerosol on fire, that his intent would have been to burn the house down. His father testified that
he... I'm sorry, just to clarify, does the record have to suggest that he had the intent to start the house on fire, or just that he had the intent to commit a crime?
The two specific predicate allegations were assault and first-degree arson. So it has to be a first-degree arson. So just spraying an aerosol can or even lighting it on fire is not first-degree arson. So it's a lot more than just walking into the house with the possibility of spraying an aerosol can or even lighting it on fire. And his father even testified that he didn't believe that his son was trying to burn down the house or even start the house on fire. He thought he was just spraying it to maybe attempt to scare them or frighten them. So this idea that he was trying to burn the house down or even start it on fire is a bit of a stretch. The only issue with a fire was when he was outside the house and he just sprayed the aerosol, I think, 3 to 4 times and lit it on fire. But again, both witnesses didn't believe that he was trying to start the house on fire.
And is there a case you can point us to support your view that he would had to have the intent to commit one of the crimes that he was charged with?
Well, not one of the crimes that he was charged with, just one of the crimes that they specifically alleged in the complaint and they were instructed on. So within count one, the jury was instructed that the two predicate offenses for count one were assault or attempted arson.
Okay.
So because they instructed on those two specific crimes, the jury couldn't then find some other make-believe crime that they weren't instructed on. So it would only be those two that they could consider. And that they were instructed on. If the court doesn't have any other questions, I can respond in rebuttal.
It doesn't appear that there are any further questions. Thank you, Mr. Erickson. Counsel for respondent, you can proceed when you're ready.
Thank you. May it please the court and counsel, my name is Stacey Sundquist, and I am appearing on behalf of St. Louis County this morning. Appellant alleges that the state failed to prove that the appellant had intent at the time that he entered the residence to commit a crime. On page 190 of the transcript, the court clearly instructs the jury that one of the elements of first-degree burglary is that the appellant entered or remained in the dwelling with the intent to commit or committed fifth-degree assault or arson in the first degree. It is not necessary that the intended crime was actually completed or intended, but it is necessary that the defendant had the intent to commit the crime at the time the defendant entered or remained in the building. The court has kind of touched on that with asking what the appellant possessed in his sweatshirt pocket when he entered the building. The record is clear that Mr. Conan entered the residence of his father knowing that he didn't have a right to be there and had a highly flammable carburetor cleaner in his sweatshirt pocket, a lighter, and had a walking stick as well. He had knocked on the window and was told to go home. He forced his way in, and the residence, which included Ms. Batami and the appellant's father, who had just had his leg amputated and was in a wheelchair, were attempting to push the appellant out of the residence. Before they could push him out, the appellant does not merely spray an aerosol in the air, he sprays a highly flammable carburetor cleaner on his father and attempts to strike at him as he's being pushed out of the residence. And then the record does reflect that he intentionally struck his walking stick on the foot of Ms. Batami. The idea that appellant seems to push forward is that the state must not only convict him of burglary in the first degree, but also have the jury convict him of a separate crime. And that is not the element of first degree burglary. That is not what the jury was instructed that they had to find. Sometimes when jurors are looking at convicting someone on several counts, they may convict on one count and then trying to be fair to the defendant, not convict on the remaining counts if they convict on the most serious. So the idea that the state has to prove the burglary beyond a reasonable doubt, as well as a fifth degree assault or the first degree arson, is not what is required under the law. And obviously not what the jury did in this case. However, the record does reflect or does support the conviction for the first degree burglary, and the record supports that. So the state is asking that the court not reverse the conviction and that it leaves the jury's conviction intact.
Sundquist, would you agree that the circumstantial evidence standard applies in this case?
Yes, Your Honor.
And what circumstances proved support the reasonable inference that Mr. Conan entered the home with the intent to commit a crime?
Well, as the court is aware, he entered with a highly flammable carburetor cleaner in his sweatshirt pocket. The can was made part of the record at trial, and it's not a small can. It was a standard size, looking like a spray paint can, which wouldn't, as the court pointed out, be something that someone would typically carry in their sweatshirt pocket. The fact that he had that in his sweatshirt pocket, he had a lighter on him, and he had a walking stick. And as Mr. Conan, the appellant's father, pointed out, the appellant's walking stick was about 4 inches longer than the Mr. Patami's walking stick. So he entered with the tools to be combative or assaultive. And the fact that he enters the building and remains in the building and sprays his father with the carburetor cleaner is evidence of an assault.
He wasn't convicted of assault though, correct?
Correct, Your Honor. And in the state's reading of the case law, the state obviously is in a position where we're arguing that it's not required that the jury convict on a separate count. of the fifth degree assault, merely that they find is an element of the first degree burglary that the appellant remained in the building or entered the building with the intent to commit a crime.
Ms. Sundquist, I hear you arguing a lot about assault as the predicate offense for the burglary. Is it your position that his intent was consistent with assault, yet not consistent with arson, the other potential predicate offense here?
Thank you, Your Honor, for bringing that up. The state is arguing that it is the arson as well. The state's position is that not to look at what happened inside of the building and outside of the building, but to look at it as one single set of acts and circumstances. When the defendant is pushed out of the building, he does take the highly flammable carburetor cleaner as well as the lighter and makes that attempt to set the building on fire. Whether his intent was to simply damage it or scare the residents or burn the whole thing down, the state argues that the court can conclude from the circumstantial evidence that he was attempting to ignite the building by his actions. So,
does the record show that he sprayed the fluid on the building, or was it just in the air, which is what my understanding is?
The witnesses did testify that he took the can and aimed it at the building. Although when the investigator went and looked, he didn't see any burn marks, but based on the testimony, it's reasonable to conclude that the appellant was attempting to ignite the building. And unless the court has any further questions, the state has no additional argument.
Ms. Sundquist, could you address the appellant's argument that there's a rational alternative hypothesis that he simply intended to enter the building to reconcile with his former girlfriend?
I believe that based on all of the evidence, and I apologize for my clanking radiators, I think that it's reasonable to conclude that the jury rejected that theory based on all of the evidence and testimony at trial.
But under the circumstantial evidence standard, we evaluate the circumstances proved to determine whether there is a rational alternative hypothesis. It's the question isn't whether the jury rejected it. The question is whether the circumstances proved support that rational alternative hypothesis of innocence.
The state's answer to that would be no. The appellant arrived with the walking stick, the carburetor cleaner. He was told to leave. He did not. There's also evidence in the transcript that Mr. Conant, the appellant's father, said that at one point, the appellant called them over 50 times in one day. They attempted to change their number. The appellant was quite aware that neither Ms. Batami or Mr. Conant wanted to speak with the appellant, and yet the appellant went to the residence, knocked on the window, was told to go away, entered without consent, and so the state argues that the court can reject that rational theory of innocence because it is simply not supported by the circumstantial evidence in the file at this point.
Ms. Sundquist, one more question from me. So we all understand that the appellant here was acquitted of the assault charge. Could this court find, notwithstanding the acquittal in the assault case, that assault was the predicate offense for the burglary and sustain the burglary conviction on that basis? Or are we bound by that acquittal in some way?
I don't believe that the Court of Appeals is bound by that acquittal. As I noted earlier, the elements of first-degree burglary were met and the jury found that. And sometimes juries do split the verdicts in some way and will convict on one and not convict on everything. But I do believe that the jury found that he acted in a way that was assaultive or intending to bring fear to the victims, or actually striking Ms. Batami on the foot with his walking stick as he's being pushed out of the residence. I do believe that it would be consistent with the law and with the evidence presented that the court could find that assault was a predicate offense and that it would still be, that the court wouldn't be required to consider whether or not the jury found him independently guilty of the assault and that they acquitted him of.
Counsel, this is Judge Larkin. Just to make sure I'm understanding, isn't what offense requiring is that he entered the building or remained in the building with intent to commit a crime? I mean, does it matter that he was not successful in committing the crime he intended? In other words, even if the jury found him not guilty of assault, couldn't they nonetheless find that his intent upon entering was to commit an assault?
I do believe that, Your Honor, and I think that's what they did here, that they convicted him of the burglary, which encompassed that assault or the arson, but then found him not guilty of the independent assault. I believe that what the jury may have done is thought, well, we found him guilty of the assault within the burglary. We don't have to double down on this other independent assault conviction. And again, I think that the record as a whole supports the Court of Appeals leaving that jury verdict intact in this case, as it is supported by the evidence.
Would you agree, though, Ms. Sundquist, that it's not our role to speculate about what the jury may have been thinking, but instead to view the circumstances proved and make a determination about whether those circumstances are consistent with the hypothesis of innocence?
Well, I think that jurors take their jobs very seriously. And in this case, the court should certainly consider what the jury found and leave that intact. Because that is the most reasonable outcome in light of everything. And I don't have anything further, Your Honor.
Any further questions from the panel?
Thank you, Your Honors. Okay.
Thank you. Mr. Erickson, you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you. Yeah, I'd just like to clarify a couple things. First, I think it's important to acknowledge that this remaining in language is when a situation when a defendant enters with consent, is in the house, and then the owner or possessor of the house revokes that consent and says, you need to leave now, and the defendant then doesn't leave. That's not what happened in this case. The state clearly proved that Mr. Conant didn't have consent to enter at the time of his entry. So under Davis, at that point, he has to have the intent to commit an assault.
Mr. Erickson,
yep.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'll ask my question.
No, I was going to go on to a different point so I can respond. Thank you.
And maybe you were about to answer my question, but would you agree that the jury doesn't have to find that he committed a crime to convict him of burglary, just that he had the intent to commit a crime? So he could be acquitted of the crime of assault, but still have the intent to enter a building, the intent to do the crime and not actually complete it, and the verdicts could be consistent.
Absolutely. When there's not a crime committed inside the house, the burglary is completed at the point of entry. So all that matters is what was his intent at the time he entered. But again, because we're in the circumstantial evidence review and he didn't make any aggressive movements or none of his conduct was assaultive or attempting to start a fire when he initially entered the house, and it was only in reaction to them physically pushing him out of the house, it's reasonable to conclude that he didn't enter to cause anyone bodily harm. That's a big stretch to say, oh, he entered to cause trouble, to confront them, to maybe spray this aerosol and just be annoying. That's one thing, but there's another to say he entered the house because he wanted to physically harm either of them. And the fact that he was acquitted of assault, that doesn't end the inquiry by any means. But it is important to know that the jury found that he didn't assault anybody in the house, and all the allegations of either him spraying the aerosol and causing assault, they acquitted him of that in count two and the burglary assault, and then also assaulting the other occupant by allegedly hitting her with the walking stick. And similar to that, the idea that he entered the house with a walking stick because he was going to assault somebody, he entered the house with a walking stick because he was using it as a walking stick. That's quite the stretch to say that that was, especially the judge actually found that the walking stick was not a dangerous weapon, because he was charged with first degree burglary with a dangerous weapon. And the court found that both the aerosol and the walking stick could not be considered dangerous weapons. So again, I think it's important to look at this in the circumstantial evidence review and see if there's a reasonable theory of innocence besides potentially a reasonable theory that he intended to assault anyone inside the house. If the court doesn't have any other questions, we ask that the court reverse Mr. Conant's conviction.
I have one further question. You're not arguing that the flammable liquid in the lighter couldn't have been used to commit first degree arson, are you?
They absolutely could have. And again, he was charged with attempted first degree arson and they acquitted him of that. So the jury was specifically asked, did you find that he had the intent to burn down this house or to start a fire to the property? And they found no. And that was based on both of the occupants' testimony that they did not believe he was trying to burn the house. And if he wasn't trying to start the house on fire when he was spraying and lighting it with the lighter, it's a stretch to then say that he had the intent to start a fire in the house when he entered the house. He left on his own accord. He sprayed the aerosol 3 or 4 times, lit it on fire, and then walked away and drove away. So if he wanted to burn the house, he would have burned he could have done it. So I think it's unreasonable to conclude that he entered the house with the intent to start the house on fire. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much to both counsel for your arguments. We will look carefully at this case and issue our opinion within the statutory timeframe. The matter is submitted.